und herzlich willkommen bei Multilingual Stories. Mein Name ist Dr. Bettina Gruber und ich bin die Linguistin. Ich unterstütze voller Begeisterung mehrsprachige Familien mit Herz und Verstand auf ihrem individuellen Weg, damit ihre Kinder alle Familiensprachen erfolgreich und mit Leichtigkeit lernen können. In meinem Podcast bekommst du sehr persönliche Geschichten von Mehrsprachigkeit aus der ganzen Welt zu hören. Lehn dich zurück und lass dich inspirieren. Hallo und herzlich willkommen beim Multilingual Stories. Mein heutiger Gast ist ein Gast, der schon einmal bei mir war. Und zwar, ich glaube, im allerersten Jahr, als mein Podcast überhaupt gestartet hat. Und das war 2020. Ja. Unglaublich. Wir feiern 5-jähriges Jubiläum. Und jetzt fällt mir auf, dass wir gar nichts gemacht haben dafür, dass wir 5 Jahre Podcast-Jubiläum haben. Ein Wahnsinn, super. Die Folge fängt schon wieder großartig an. Die letzte Folge war sicher eine der allerlustigsten, die ich jemals aufgenommen habe. Ich kann mich noch sehr daran erinnern, wie wir gelacht haben. Die letzte Folge mit Gabriela war auf Englisch und wir werden auch heute wieder switchen, haben wir beschlossen. Obwohl Gabriela eigentlich auch sehr gut Deutsch spricht, werden wir trotzdem diese Folge wieder auf Englisch aufnehmen. Ich freue mich riesig. Hello, welcome back, Gabriela Encina. It's so good to have you back. How are you? Please introduce yourself tell us who you are.
Okay, first of all, I'm very, very happy to be here and celebrating 5 years. Oh, amazing. My God, the time flew. Thank you for having me again, 5 years after. Hopefully next time is not 5 years after. So I'm Gabriela Encina. I'm a psychologist and coach for expats, multiculturals, internationals, people who moved abroad. And they're facing challenges very specific to this lifestyle, very unique to this lifestyle. And I help them through counseling, keynotes and workshops for companies to overcome those challenges and be their best selves wherever they are in the world. Mm.
You do know a lot about that since you're an expert yourself. Maybe you want to give us a little bit about your personal background. Whoever wants to know more, go back 5 years and listen to the first episode.
But look at the faces, please, the wrinkles and all of that.
It's a podcast, just listen to it.
Yeah, you're right. So I started my journey in 2010. Although I moved from one little city in Chile, where I come from, one little city to the big capital, that was the first big move. The first international move was to Vienna, Austria, in 2010. And I lived there for almost 8 years. I learned the language. I integrated. I got a wonderful job. And then I was with my then partner. We decided to move to Vienna Spain, to Malaga, because it was kind of boring in Vienna. No challenges anymore. Mm-hmm. And because of the weather and a lot of other things. And then we decided to move here. I'm still here in Spain, but in another city, in Valencia, with another partner, a Spaniard. And I faced during those changes from Chile to Vienna and from Vienna to Spain, to Malaga, I faced a lot of different changes and challenges that I didn't expect. Okay. And I didn't, at that time, I didn't find anyone who could help me very specifically, because the advice that I was getting, the advice was like, okay, but you should go back home then, or you should try to integrate more, or you should try to learn the language and interact with locals, as if I didn't try that already, right? Mm-hmm. So that this generic advice got me very angry and very hands on to, I have to do something about it. So I started to working with expats, and I've been doing that exclusively since 2018, and it's going very good. And I've helped a lot, more than 500 expats so far.
Amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So you already mentioned it in your introduction, but I just want to repeat it now because I think this is crucial. You are a trained psychologist. So you put this whole experience that you went through yourself on top of the training that you already had, and you tied that into a fantastic package that now allows you to help expats and people struggling abroad.
Exactly. Right. Yes. Yes.
So let's dive right into it. Mm-hmm. You already mentioned like common challenges. What are the most common challenges that you come across with your customers?
Well, it's definitely like I call it the big three, because they replicate over and over again in my clients, especially in female clients, but in general. Loneliness, guilt.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And there are very specific kinds of guilt we can dive in or not, but loneliness, guilt, and a loss of self-confidence.
Like,
like I call it involution. Like they, almost all of them tell me kind of they become a toddler. They became a child. They are not their self anymore. They are very helpless and they feel like a baby in many things that usually they could do in 2 seconds. It takes them hours, if not days, if not nothing to get them to do them. They have to ask for help to their partners usually, or they don't do it. Because they don't dare, like a baby. Yeah.
So, I mean, naturally, my mind immediately springs to the language, right?
Yes.
So, is this something that's also related to linguistic competencies? To, like, you were trained in your job, in your native language, and then all of a sudden you're in a different country, and you are highly trained, you're maybe super witty and funny, and smart, but then you're in a different language and you're struggling to find the words. Mm-hmm. So is that part of the story?
Absolutely, 100%. Mm-hmm. It's like, as you perfectly described it, I was super, and I highly competent, high achiever, witty, intelligent, the best of the class. And then suddenly here, I can't even say basic things or order things or go to the hairdresser without making mistakes and without feeling embarrassed. So that affects directly how they see themselves as competent or not in the language. So there's like the fluency and all the factors that you know so well, but the psychological part of it, it's sorry, it's like a cloud tainting all their efforts to learn the language or to become fluent in the language, the new language.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So one of the things, so I do work with a lot of expat women, mostly, as you know, as well. Mm-hmm. And the thing that comes up most often within the context of the work that I do is the loneliness. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one passing on the language to my child. It feels so overwhelming. It's all on my shoulders. Often the partner doesn't even speak the language at all. So share some of your secrets. What are the top tips or the top tip that you would give a mom with, say, I don't know, 2 or 3 kids feeling lonely, feeling alone with passing on the language, maybe already being fully immersed in like in the culture, in the country where they are. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, the thing is that this starting to pass on your own language very often brings up this connection to home again, to the roots again, to your heritage again. So it's also not always an easy feat to attempt that, right?
Yeah.
So what's your, that was very different layers all at once. I'm sorry about that.
But yes, it is so like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is like, what do you say to somebody who comes to you? What kind of questions do you ask? What kind of insights can you give into how to best deal with the loneliness? I know it's, you know, we have very little time for a huge topic that probably takes me weeks to talk about, but like just so the first
glance
you'd like to.
Okay. So first and foremost, although it's constantly being said by you, by me, by anyone who works in this area or this with this group, you are not alone. Don't forget that. I will never get tired of repeating that. You are not alone, although it feels alone. And that's the thing. Connecting to your home. A ver. So many people think that to overcome loneliness, they need to connect more and more and more with the host country where they are and disconnect or not be so aware of their home country. And that's the, like one of the first things that I ask and that I see is like, no, but I should integrate more, right? And yes, you should. It's better when they integrate, yet it's pivotal they maintain their connection to their home country. Mm. Pivotal for the loneliness. Not important, pivotal, essential, key, stressed, super important.
That's so interesting.
Yes.
Please explain a little more.
Yeah. Because the connections that you have with the people, with your background, with your past, they are not replaceable. You are not going to find those connections. Similar, yes. Very close, yes, but not the same ones. Mm-hmm. The people that understand your history, your story, the way you were when you were 10, 12, 15, 8, those people, family and friends, you're not going to find those people anymore, right? So that connection needs to be fostered and taken care of. So it's not either or, it's both, mm-hmm. right? And that's super important. That's the first one. And tied to that one is I always recommend them to have like a little corner to remind them home. Like a little corner in your bookshelf where you have like a couple of books of your home country or a couple of photos of your home country, something that reminds you. Like here, it's backwards. I don't know how you see it, but that's a Valparaíso. That's my hometown.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So I always have that. And there are another things that they're not very professional, but they tie me to my country.
Yeah.
And I always, when I see them, even if I'm talking to you, I see them, it brings me joy and it brings me a sense of connection that I don't have here and I didn't have in Austria. So I don't know if that makes sense.
Totally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the third one is also keep traditions. Like if you're passing the language, for example, keep traditions that you had in your home country, like cooking a meal, like going to a movie, to movies to see something in your language or read books in your language that you read or music that you heard, right? Mm-hmm. That you can pass not only the language, but also the emotions and the connection to mm-hmm. your country, to your children.
Yeah.
Those would be my advices. Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating. That's a very counterintuitive advice for many, I think. Yeah. But it makes so much sense. Of course, you know, you want to keep those ties. Mm-hmm. So one case that I've repeatedly had. So as you know, I primarily work with women who either never passed on the language or who stopped passing on the language to their children. Mm-hmm. And especially those who had never done it before they came to me. There are always some amongst them who didn't do it because they did want to sever the ties. They're like, there's a reason I moved away from home. There is a reason I went away because I did not want to be exposed to this environment anymore. It was, I don't know, toxic. It made me unhappy. So women who then came to the new country and they fully plunged into the new culture, into the new language, and they were like, I'm here. I want to be here. I want to stay here. I want to assimilate as much as I can. And then they have children and then the children get older and all of a sudden they realize, oh my God, they don't speak my language. Oh my God, they can't talk to my parents. And I mean, you know, having kids kind of also does that to you. You sort of mm-hmm. become more aware of your roots and where you come from and brings that up again.
Mm-hmm.
So do you work with women who have this kind of, oh, I fled the country, but now I kind of seek the connection again?
Yes, absolutely. Sadly, yes, and especially with traumatic experiences, either in the country with no one, like no family, no friends, but someone, right? Or within the family or within the friends that they think they need to cut ties with the country. Yeah. As you said, they fully immerse themselves in the new culture and they integrate and they have friends and all of that. Wonderful, perfect. But as you said, as they become mothers, everything shifts and also the kids need that part. Like they actually start asking, but mom, where are you from? What's the language? Why I don't speak the language? Why you don't show me things from that? That's my part too. I'm a quarter or a half, whatever, that person too. Why are you, quote unquote, hiding that from me? Or why you, or they don't articulate it like that, but neglecting, right? So yeah, I see that. And it's important that they get help, psychological help to navigate that trauma, those traumas or the toxic environments, etc. And also they are neglecting not only their children, but themselves, because they are also that person that was born there, that grew up there. And it's not only that traumatic or those traumatic experiences that they lived, that they contained, of course, all of it. But that baggage, if you don't work on that, you are going to keep carrying it. Even if you try to deny it and hide it and pushing the ball in the pool, and it always, always, always comes back.
It does. Yeah, it does. And especially with children, you know, they have this kind of
the mirror,
obnoxious ability to mirror you and to, you know, point out exactly the weak spots that you have. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I always say, you know, we as parents, we have the choice. Either we stick to the patterns that we are used to and just continue that and pass that on to the next generation. Mm-hmm. Or we face the patterns and we say, I don't want to repeat that. So then I have to work on where did it come from? Where did it originate? How can I get rid of it? How can I deal with it in a healthy way? And that very often requires help, right? We very often can't do that by ourselves because we have blind spots and we need some professional to.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So while you were talking now, and you know, I, you know that these conversations are never prepared and I go very much by intuition at what comes up.
I love that.
There's one very specific scenario that I would like to talk to you about and get your insight about. As you know, I mostly work with parents who haven't passed on a language or who stopped passing on a language. Now, what I find very interesting and what I always tell them is, you know, at age 11, 12, 13, that's when kids usually come and say, why didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Why does this happen around this age? I find this super interesting. Before I started working with parents, I always thought, oh, this would be something, you know, that maybe comes up when they're grown up and then they realize, but it comes up so much sooner.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
Yes, absolutely. Because they are forging their identity at that age and they are starting to decide for themselves what they want and don't want. Like they are just starting, but still. And that's something that is so obvious for them. Like my mom is from Russia and I don't speak Russian. And people started asking, okay, but you are, or your mom is from there. Why don't you, right? Yeah. And peer pressure and teenagers, that's a big one. And also peer pressure and uniqueness, right? It sounds like incompatible, but it is compatible. Like this is something that I could have and was denied. And on those teenage years, finding out such things, it can be really boiling and really, they act out on it. So yeah, it's very, very common. I've seen that a lot of times that teenagers get rebellious or get angry at their parent because they didn't pass the language. Yeah.
Yeah. I find that so fascinating. I mean, it makes total sense the way you put it. And yes, it's the age of finding your identity. It makes perfect sense. Still, I never expected to hear that early, but it really does come that early that kids complain. Yeah. What I then find also very fascinating is, so there are people who, even as teenagers, take the language into their own hands. So I know people who at the age of 15, 16, 17 said, oh, well, if you don't pass it on to me, fine by me. Then I take a course at school. I worked with people who eventually graduated at high school in their native language, even though their parents didn't pass it on, who take courses at university, who take it in their own hands. And I find that amazing. Like, you know, when you grow up at some point, you have to take responsibility for your own life, right? I mean, you can continue blaming your parents for what they didn't do or for what they did do. But at some point, you know, I mean, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there are these people who for the rest of their life say, yeah, but they didn't do it. I'm still angry at my parents because they didn't do it. Who don't take responsibility. What distinguishes people who do take responsibility from people who are not able to do that?
I love that topic. It's usually, it has little to nothing. No, not nothing, but very little to do with language. That's the highlight, like that's the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
It's something that they can go to that very specific to blame.
Yes.
But yeah. It's a relationship or something else that happened. It only like this blaming is only, it embodies something else, but it's not that. It's just the excuse to blame them and not take responsibility. Yes, that there might be some of it, but it's more complex than that. It is the acceptable, socially acceptable way to blame your parents of something that gets deeper than that.
And probably that trait shows up in other areas of life as well. That's what I'm gathering from what you just said.
Amazing. Absolutely.
Yeah. You just dropped a keyword that is crucial to my work, so I have to pick it up right away.
Yes.
And that's relationship. So I think the main factor that really distinguishes the work I do from the work other people in the similar domain do is the very, very heavy focus on relationships. So even when I talk to parents about how to pass on the language, one of the key factors that I always tell them, relationship comes always first, always. Like the relationship between you and your kid, that's the most holiest there can be. And language has to come after that.
Yeah.
So that's, don't we know already? I mean, I'm asking the expert here. Don't we know already that children and even adults, to really thrive, they need safe, secure relationships? We know that, right? Research is showing it.
Yep. The thing is, when it's about you, it's completely different. I mean, it's difficult. You have the big blind spot or the blindness there. So you can know everything, but to apply it to your own life is very, very difficult and very challenging. But I 100% agree with you. Relationship first, always. 100%. 100%.
So now I have to ask you the really tricky question here. Oh my God, I'm a little nervous now about what you're going to say. Would you ever, like, are there any scenarios where you would think it was okay to lie to a child or to pretend not to understand the child? Your child is talking to you in, say, German, but you want your child to speak Spanish with you.
Mm-hmm.
Would you think it was okay for you to pretend to not to understand, even though you do?
No.
Thank you.
No. Never. No.
You can always lying to your kids, right?
No. You can always do, let's say, like, okay, I'm not going to talk to speak German with you, and no matter what you say, I'm not going to, right? Because this and this and this, and like, then you can always negotiate, blah blah blah. But no. I mean, I justify lies in certain circumstances, but they have nothing to do with language learning or language trespassing. But no. I can't see a way that I could say yes to you. No.
Because in my world, this is a breach of trust. My child wants to communicate with me. I'm effectively lying to my child.
Yeah.
So in my world, in my method, this is an absolute no-go.
No.
And the reason why this came up now was because for me, this goes hand in hand with relationship first, always.
Yeah.
And if I, you know, I cannot, and there is no circumstance under which I could in any world justify pretending not to understand my child who wants to communicate with me, who wants to build a relationship, who wants to relate to me just because of this supposed noble end of the child speaking the language.
No.
It's communication first. It's relationship first.
Absolutely. And you know what? As you were talking, I was thinking about all those that has not necessarily to do with language, but all the parents that force their child because they are good at violin playing or piano playing or ballet or whatever, right? And they are forcing that to them. Mm-hmm. What happens most of the time, they either block it whatsoever, they don't do it, or they get averse to that or to their parents.
Or both. Yeah.
So it's no, it's a no, under any circumstance. No.
Yeah. Thank you. I was really getting a little bit nervous then. I'm like, oh my God, what do I do if she says no, that's okay.
Edit.
So sorry, we have to cut that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
I'm very glad to hear this feedback from a psychologist, because what often happens in the linguistics literature is the sole focus is the language.
Yeah.
And there is research on what kind of tricks, and I'm very deliberately calling them tricks, what kind of tricks you can apply so that your child would answer in the language that you want. Mm-hmm. And those tricks are exactly along the lines that I just mentioned. You pretend not to understand them, for instance, right? Mm. And I think that this is actually highly dangerous. And it doesn't take into account the huge body of literature and research that we have from attachment theory, from learning theory, from psychology, child development, where we know what is crucial for a healthy development.
Yeah.
So I love that answer. Thank you. Because, you know,
you're very welcome. As you said, safety and trust.
Yeah.
If you break them, there's no way back. No.
Yeah. No. And I think the dangerous thing here is that you don't immediately see the effects on children, because a 3-year-old is not going to say, oh, you suck, leave me alone, because they're dependent on you, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You probably get the bill once they hit puberty. And they are like, you lied to me. Why should I be honest with you?
Yep.
Because there is a level at which they know for sure. Right.
Yeah. And also very important from my side and also from yours is modeling. We are modeling them through our behavior. Yes. Sorry. Not only what we do or say, what we say or apply in our teachings, but what we do without them knowing or without them watching. They're always watching, and they incorporate all of that, and all explodes in your face in puberty. Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. You're very welcome.
I think it's so important, you know, that different areas of research and expertise come together. Mm. And especially when it's about our children, like we have such a huge responsibility there and it shapes the future. Yeah. So I think we really, really need to do right by them as much as we can. And that means facing our own challenges, our own traumas, our own history, our own everything that you help with. As well as learning about how to be the best possible parent we can be, which doesn't require us to be perfect in my world. Not at all. It requires us to be human and honest and transparent and always, always in connection with them. So amazing. So, you know, I love sending, I keep sending clients of mine to you because I think this is so important. The personal well-being has such a huge influence on how parents can pass on the language that's, you know, the family language that's not supported in the environment. Mm-hmm. And this becomes much, much easier the healthier we are, not just physically, but also mentally. So I love sending clients to you.
I know. Thank you.
I know you are working on the part that helps them heal themselves and become, you know, more happy, joyful human beings, and then parents as well.
Yeah.
So who do you work with? You said it in the beginning already, but tell us again, who do you work with and how can one reach you?
Well, I work with people, women, men, anyone who moved abroad to a different country, to a different language, to a different culture. And it's experiencing the challenges, the unique and very specific challenges that life abroad bring. And that includes, of course, passing your language to your kids. Mm-hmm. I work either with individuals, with couples, with multicultural couples as well, and with companies with international employees. And I do it with the companies with workshops and keynotes. And with individuals by online counseling. So yeah, they can reach out to gabriela-encina.com. And then we take it from there.
Fantastic. We will definitely link that in the show notes, of course, so people can reach you. So yeah, I think this personal healing journey is just so, so important for humans in general and for life abroad in particular, because yes, I know myself from my own experiences. It can be super, it sounds so flashy in the beginning, doesn't it? Like, oh my God, this is going to be so exciting. And then all of a sudden you're there smack in the middle of a different country and you're like, you can't even order bread at the bakery. Without making a mistake and being massively embarrassed.
Yeah.
Like I've had moments where I was on the streets. I'm like, I have a fucking PhD and I can't even get out of space. Exactly. I feel so stupid, right? That's what you were saying earlier. So I think it's fantastic that you're helping people with these challenges to lead a happy and fulfilled and a joyful life. And you are the perfect example that this is possible, right?
It can be, it can happen. Yeah. It takes a lot of courage to accept that we are not perfect. And we, what we did, PhDs and CEOs and everything in our home country is not transpassable, like translatable one-to-one, but it can be even better if you work on that. So yeah, it is possible. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Gabriela, is there anything that you would still like to mention that I didn't ask you? Any advice that you want to send out there? Anything that is still on your needs to come off your list?
Yeah, thank you for saying that. You were mentioning before, like we expect things to happen when we move to a different country, and. Like, I don't know, in a shiny way, in a very happy-go-lucky way. Oh, we have the experience of our lives or the opportunity of our lives. And that, I remember that I told you at the beginning, one of the challenges is guilt. Guilt of not feeling what I'm supposed to feel.
Oh, wow. Yes, of course.
I should be happy. Yeah. I should be throwing my freaking PhD to anyone who could listen. I should be able to learn this language in 3 months because I'm highly intelligent. How can I not? Or how can I not trespass my language to the children, to my children, in a very systematic and organized way? Why can't I? Should. Guilt. Yeah. Right?
Wow.
So that, it's important. You are not perfect. We are not perfect. We are the way we are. And that's important to trespass to our kids too, because they learn that we are not perfect and that it's okay. And when they are not perfect, they have the right to be loved and to improve.
Oh, wow. Ah, goosebumps. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's a perfect closing statement.
Wonderful.
So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. There's one thing we forgot. You counsel in English, in Spanish, and in German. So you're available for all these three languages, which is amazing, right?
Yes. Thank you.
For remembering thank you, that. Yeah. Gabriela, so much for being here,
thank
for your
you,
time.
Bettina.
And for fantastic advice and insights you gave. Thank you for listening today. If you did, please pass on this episode if you know of somebody who, you know, who might benefit from this one. Leave us a comment, leave us a like, and I hope to, well, see you sort of again next time when it's time to say, Hallo und herzlich willkommen bei Multilingual Stories.